interrupting the current neo-Euchronial, climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Tube Busting Episode BTWRLM552. Remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. It's where you take your action to the people who are offending you. And they don't have a support in the law for that, typically. There's always going to be an authority that someone comes to you by if they have something to say, or they're just trying to scam you. And so this always applies across the board. We tend to use it with the news, what we call the notice. It tells us what's going on. It shows us the what's going on in the day and what we might anticipate in the future moving forward before people see it. And this comes after when people see it, except behind the woodshed. I kept telling you, be careful. These chemicals they put out, they want to pass the environmental tests, so they say that they're not detrimental. No different than you saw Kobe swindle. They're not detrimental. They're safe and effective. In this case, not persistent. And then we found out they, in fact, are persistent, these things. And you look at the chemistry behind them, and you kind of wonder, well, how could it not be? Bayer hit with a $1.56 billion loss in latest Roundup cancer verdict. The misery jury handed to Bayer and its Monsanto subsidiary a fourth Roundup weed killer trial loss and ordered the pesticide maker to pay $1.56 billion to four plaintiffs who claim the company's pesticide causes cancer. The jury found the companies liable for design defects, negligence and failure to warn about the cancer risks associated with Roundup and its effective ingredient glyphosate. These claims echo those of other Roundup lawsuits. I would interject, remember, you found a whole bunch of people in India that were having problems as well. This is in the United States, however. And Bayer has been able to win. We might see that here in the text. But Bayer called the punitive damage awards unconstitutionally excessive and plans to appeal the decision. Just a quick interjection. It sounds like it's quite a bit for just four plaintiffs, but neither here nor there. That'll be worked out. Before the latest loss, Bayer and Monsanto won 9 consecutive trials of misery. However, just prior to the newest misery verdict, a California jury awarded $332 million at the end of October to a cancer patient who claimed Monsanto didn't adequately warn about Roundup's cancer risk. So the battle here for your health rages on. Remember, now these people were harmed before they could get compensated. That usually is a good thing, that you have to be harmed before, but we can watch this, these harms coming on to us now, even before they happen. And then you see it takes so long for any kind of verdicts at all. In this case, they have the money to pay for the lawyers, and you saw they've actually defeated 9 other cases. And can't say it's a tide turning, but there's some other evidence coming forward, I guess, that's able to prevail against even Bayer, and some of their appeal, they've won on appeals a lot of times as well. So, big, a lot of money to a company, multinational. And you'll see the actual, more reasonable one, if I can say reasonable, seems to be California, where hundreds of millions, and even that is, I wonder, not sure how they tie that together to the harm. Typically, you can see the value of you by watching an insurance company and what it rates the loss of your limbs and the loss of your sight for, and that's usually the money that they pay you for the parts that you have fallen off of you. Moving from misery to mystery, canine disease spreading across the United States, the unknown respiratory illness has infected dogs in at least 9 states, leading to the deaths in rare cases. A mystery respiratory illness sickening dogs across the United States has spread to more states, raising fears over a potential canine pandemic as veterinarians struggle to identify the disease and track its origin. The illness, called atypical canine infectious respiratory disease, has infected hundreds of dogs in Oregon alone. The first California cases came to light on Tuesday when the Los Angeles County Public Health Department reported that at least 10 dogs had been sickened with the disease. Dogs in at least 7 other states, stretching from New Hampshire to Illinois to Colorado to Washington, have reportedly been infected. In rare cases, the disease can be fatal. Typically, simple symptoms include coughing, lethargy, nasal discharge, and loss of appetite. Affected dogs have tested negative for common respiratory illnesses that cause similar symptoms. The American Veterinary Medical Association warned on Tuesday that the cases of canine respiratory illness were increasing throughout the United States. The group recommended taking several precautions, including keeping pet vaccinations up to date and avoiding unnecessary gatherings of dogs, such as taking them to the dog parks. Little is known about this disease and how it spreads, says the AVMA. So let me ask you a question here. If you saw their suggestions, if a vaccine is to stop a known infectious agent, and this infectious agent is unknown, and there is no evidence in the article that any of the vaccines that they're telling you to get work, and it's not fraudulently claimed, as was done in the great COVID swindle, how does this sound advice to suggest that just any vaccine be kept up to date, unless this is just a profiteering promotion of the vet representing organization to the additional profit of its members? And so we have to really take a look at what this advice really is. You've got a sick, any dog that's sick, we need to find out what this thing is about. This seems to be the extension of COVID swindle's propaganda, where there doesn't seem to be an actual understanding of what it is yet. There's lots of treatment options, and a lot of it is go get a vaccine and get more care, get more medicines. It's something we don't even know. So they acknowledge that nobody knows of this cause. So again, what are you going to treat for? Again, it's just symptoms. I'm not saying it's not dangerous. I'm just saying the dogs didn't die, but we have the same problem here. We're watching the medical professions, if you will, across the board. They're really just showing themselves up in large part to be not suitable for what we actually need. We call them experts, but they're really not. I don't know what more to say. So what else can we do, folks? I mean, we have to read on here. There's vaccines. You keep your pet on the vaccine list. I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just saying that has no, when you look at anybody who read the communicable disease law realizes what a vaccine's for, you can't just be telling people, just keep your vaccines up. That's not what a vaccine's all about. And that promotes the fact that any vaccine should continue to work. And that's just more misinformation by the government. We read on here, the Los Angeles County Public Health Department recommended the sick dogs be kept at home and isolated for at least 28 days, while canines that were exposed to them should be quarantined at home for 14 days. Some of the affected California dogs have been sick since the beginning of October, and one dog died of the disease, the Department of Los Angeles told the LA Times. So not much to go on here, potentially very serious. I wonder if maybe ivermectin might work for the potential canine pandemic, so-called. So you see what they did there, too. This is just sheer fear tactic. There's a real thing that could be going on, but they keep plying this fear tactic. There's no substance about this whole thing. They adopt the United Nations policy, the WHO, not the rock group, not the OWL, not the little people from Whoville, but the World Health Organization. They adopt those policies. And there is no pandemic outside of that private organization. But what you have is in the medical field, in the communicable disease field, is outbreaks and epidemics. But pandemics do not exist outside the state. They exist only into the WHO's private definition for that. And that pertains supposedly only to people. So you watch these organizations just tying into the fear mongering. It's not necessary either. And it does us no good. But they use these terms to familiarize us that if the WHO uses it, and the CDC refers to the WHO, it's acceptable, even for our pets. Now, if I said it that way, it doesn't even make any sense that they'd be talking about that word. So, unless one agrees with the humanists that believe humans are animals, not mankind. And then the WHO pandemic only applies to the human animal, not canines. Why are they using the word pandemic? It's only got to be either abject ignorance, which is another problem on top of the lack of good advice they give us here for an unknown thing, or it's a continuation of control. And somehow they picked up that that's what we want to do. These are all non-governmental organizations, and they have a different standard that we would have to apply. And they continue to expand the terror here through linguistic mission creep, it seems to me. They just adopt this language. There's no real rationale for it at all. And then how is this unknown disease creeping around the country all of a sudden at all? All of a sudden, it's creeping around the country. And they're being able to use this to scare us some more. And I'm not saying it's not there. But I hesitate here to speculate on how this thing all of a sudden just showed up. Although we can kind of put our mind toward it and what they did with the COVID swindle. Remember, it didn't exist. When they named the flu and the common cold something that with a scary name. And it still didn't exist until the jab. And then it existed. But it was novel. It was man-made. It was created. So, do your research here, folks. I can almost hear the news now. The first zoonotic transfer of novel deadly contagion from canine to human. Can you just smell the mRNA needleless aerial delivered bioweapons and vaccine package, folks? Can you hear it coming? Hear the helicopters? Wait until your cats get it. Get it? Or is it time to get behind the woodshed and stop these mission creeps? I don't know what else to say. This is an ongoing plan. Someone's figured this out. And we aren't responding quite right. We didn't respond to the COVID swindle. I was hoping for better. And so they keep continuing this noise. But it's a mystery, folks. Remember? Come out of misery, go to mystery, and we have another one. Mysterious now, at the same time coming up. A mysterious pneumonia is ripping through Chinese schools. So here we have, can you smell it, folks? The building storm of the winds of the global event horizon. And if you can't, how about after seeing this story come up just in time? The mysterious pneumonia is ripping through hospitals in Beijing and 500 miles northeast in Liaoning are overwhelmed with sick children with unusual symptoms that include inflammation in the lungs and a high fever, but no cough, according to local news reports. Scientists today called for vigilance and transparency from China amid reports of a mystery cluster of pneumonia, which has eerie similarities to the early COVID outbreak. So they're starting to rattle our tree again, see if any monkeys fall out quick. So this sounds suspiciously familiar, don't it? Eerily even, says Snagglepuss. And the promoted threat to everyone here, you can read it right in the story. The last time I saw reports on an outbreak of undiagnosed pneumonia in Japan, that was no big deal. It wouldn't amount to much. That was in December 2019. Not making the same mistake again, it says Dr. Neil Stone, an infectious disease specialist, doctor at the University College Hospital of London. And so we have the same similar players coming in, all to say we're not going to make that mistake again. What was the mistake? The mistake was listening to the experts, it seemed to me. And I can prove it in through the basics of reading through the law. Anybody could. This alert around China has issued late on Tuesday via ProMed, a large, publicly available global surveillance system that monitors infectious diseases. It was a ProMed notification back in December 2019 that brought COVID to the attention of the world. While, we read some more, Dr. Kruptika Kupali, an infectious disease physician who is part of the WHO's Health Emergencies Program, said testing and making those results public was crucial, adding to a post on X that the illness could be anything. So, it could be anything, folks. It's like COVID swindle 2.0, even. Thanks, Snagglepuss. In our younger ears, we had these little characters that would come along, point out to us how we were going to question this stuff. On and on, this stuff goes on. What's the answer to anything communicable, so folks, here on all this? always cartoon characters come to mind. We keep hearing the same story. The requirement to identify one thing is the infectious principle that my listener would have to be shown to have. You first are suspected by a report. It's a suspect thing, and then there's a report, typically by a doctor. And then there has to be the identity of the, by what my listener would have be the principal agent of that infectious principle, and determined by a lawful due process pursuant to your local communicable disease law. It's really fairly simple. This is not out of the ordinary. You can read it. It's objective. I don't make any of this stuff up. This is too dangerous. We don't know when the real thing comes along. We don't know if it's a real thing because they're not really doing the right test. Then we find out there is no test. You know, I'm fascinated after almost 4 years now. Nobody will pick up my X files here. To restate that or research it and then contend against what I've been saying, it wasn't that hard of a puzzle here, actually. And yet, there could be a real thing that we need to look at. And whether it's our dogs, our cats, it's us. Whether someone wants to treat us as an animal or not, it's all irrelevant if we're going to get something that we need to focus on. If we don't have the right information, we can't make the right decisions on fixing it or focusing on what to fix. So, we can identify. I told you this was going to go on and on. This is the Achilles heel of people. They're fearful. It's a boogie monster. These viruses are unknown to anybody, whatever, even if you agree with the virus or not. There's something out there that you can't put your finger on. It's unknown. It's a mystery. That's how they get into our psyche. So we keep on going through this article. We can pick up more details. So right at the time, we have these mysterious things going on in the canines, and they all sound like they're all referencing pandemics, and all these words come together. It says, it may be out of the ordinary. We do tend to see increased seasonally these, so it's really too early to say. They admit in the article, all this is seasonal. These types of things happen routinely every year. Do they lead with that in the heading? No. So this is, they keep pounding this the weakness in people to, first of all, you want to protect yourself. That's normal. But then you engage this without rationale. And that's how they get us. And we can read some more here. It added that this article added that the parents questioned whether the authorities were covering up the epidemic with all of this. That there is, he says, there is a suspicion the new outbreak, proper word, not pandemic, new outbreak, local, could be related to Mycoplasma pneumonia, also known as walking pneumonia, which is reportedly growing in China as the country goes into its first winter without strict COVID lockdowns in place. So now they come back to you with what they want to try and do. This is coming out to the world as we move into seasonally acceptable times of the common cold and the flu. As I told you, going into 2020, coming out through December, and looking back into November, and before that, the reports that said that flu, there was something, a seasonal flu that was getting worse and worse and worse. And they had no answer for that, but they knew that it was the seasonal flu. They couldn't do anything about it. Anything seasonal, see, they can't do anything about it relative to lockdowns. And this is the big hook right there. So they tell us, the parents are looking around and saying, well, this is what happens all the time. It's like I've told you over and over. The kids go back to school, you're going to have sickness coming home. It just seems to be the way that works. And somehow that makes us stronger, actually. That's a kind of a pain, but apparently our immune systems need it. What it doesn't need is it doesn't need artificial instigation. And that's what they've tried to work throughout, the technicians have worked through. So the wrong treatment on all this for a fraudulent, undemonstrated infectious agent causes more disease. You hear it right here in this story as well. So again, in these stories, they call them news. There's the notice of what's going on and how to really analyze it. And the detriment to these so-called experts running around trying to force something on something that doesn't exist. And it's important that the parents are interested, because this is where the officials have to be careful about going beyond the sensibilities. So maybe your canine could also benefit from a non-fraudulent demonstration of an infectious agent before just any treatment suggestion, such as just any vaccine here, for more proper care and hopefully cure relative to vaccines, they're supposed to stop this stuff. It's right there in the communicable disease law. I really didn't have to make much up here. They explained to me exactly what was supposed to happen. I was shocked that not a lot of people figured out to go do that. Instead, they make up all kinds of things. They make up all kinds of stories about what's going on, and now they get to lament all the bad things that happened and be the expert over how to read charts of things that were predictable what happened when you identified that there was nothing natural going on. It was all a bioweapon delivery system. Then nobody seemed to stop it, and there was every ability to stop it. And so I want to return us back to one quick document I had before. Could you see the news, the notice to us plying mysteries and unknowns and actions and reiterating the COVID swindle technicals, the lockdowns, all without finding. I want to remind us again and some of the techniques to continue the mind programming control that I have a link to this document. I've talked about it before, a NATO book on the psyops and brainwashing. It's called Cognitive Warfare, and we can go through I'll just read the headlines of it here, the headings within the table of contents. The advent of cognitive warfare from information warfare to cognitive warfare, hacking the individual. Well, that sounds like Kobe Swindle's jab, doesn't it? From the inside. Trust in the target, cognitive warfare, a participatory propaganda, behavioral economy, cyber psychology, the centrality of the brain. Understanding the brain is a key challenge for the future. That's one of your powers there, folks. They tell you right there. The vulnerabilities of the human brain, the role of emotions, the battle for attention. So you have to be in control of these. This reminds me all the time I read this stuff and say, this is the protocols of the elders of Zion. And when you read through that without all the nonsense and politics, it's telling you, and this is where I get the fact that there's someone that knows me better than myself, whether you get that or not, that's what I got. And there's some things I just don't know even about myself that someone may know better that they can exploit. Then it becomes one where you have to have the humility to say, yeah, okay, I'm vulnerable. Now what do I do? And I have to be protective of the vulnerabilities I may not even know I have. And this starts to require that we look a lot more rationally at things, a lot less emotional. We don't want to feed into that. And I'm not saying you don't be emotional, but don't let it drive a bunch. I mean, a lot of people move through anger. I've found for me, being angry doesn't really do anything. I can get angry, but it doesn't really function after that point. But if you're angry, then you're giving your energy into something that can be controlled. We can work in frequency if we want, but there's a reverse signal that comes back, and we can absorb that. But so a battle for attention, you have to control that as well. We can get on the internet and play parlor games with it and go all over the place, or we have to stay focused and understand what we're after. We have to make those decisions before we moved in so that we have a basis, an obligation, an objective basis in order to function. We're not guided by the nose around by everybody's opinion. Not that their opinion may not be good, bad, but it may not be good either, and so we have to learn to discern. And that shows us this centrality of the human brain in this thing about cognitive warfare. It's important. It's one of the headings of this year. The militarization of brain science, progress and viability of neuroscience and technology, military and intelligence use of neuroscience and technology, direct weaponization of neuroscience and technology, neurodata, the neurobioeconomy, towards a new operational domain. We talked about a lot of this stuff. I briefly touched it. It's important. To me, the first three stories is this condition. What happens if you don't control it, that you have time over time that you can, maybe a few of you can get remuneration for the harm, like through Bayer. But then in the rest of it, it's a mystery. And the system plays off of the mystery and the dangers and your emotions. And they're not unfound to want to take care of your animals or yourself, but they can prey on you in ways, and you hand over your authority to them, usually right away. A few of us don't, but then we are now have our own ignorance to work with. But to hear, they understand, all these folks that do this know this. They've done tests. They've done plenty of, they got universities that do this all the time. A lot longer than I think any of my listeners have been alive. It's always been going on. So a little bit of a disadvantage, but when you learn that, it's kind of a reverse disadvantage. It becomes more of the advantage. You still have the vulnerabilities, but you're now aware of it. And that's really important. So we move on here towards a new operational domain, Russia and Chinese cognitive warfare definition. It's about humans. So don't be that animal, folks, is one of the things here. To do what the other section says, you cannot be just an animal in the world that they treat. Remember, this COVID swindle came through veterinary army, military veterinary care, starting with horses. That's where all that, remember, I talked about that. So, recommendations for NATO and ATO, definitions of human domain, impact on warfare development, and then we have an annex here, nation-state case study, the weaponization of neuroscience in China, and nation-state study 2, the Russian National Technology Initiative. And so, I've read this before, I want to go through the heading. You go through and you list and you start to look at the news, and you start to realize they're hitting these things. So to read this document is going to be important to get a baseline on what they think they're doing. And it's a recent document since COVID swindle started. So understand that as well. So want to reiterate that. I didn't want to read through more of that than to show you that there's some very important things they look at in you. And a lot of those you have control over or not. And that's what I've been attempting to do the whole entire time behind Woodshed, is start to bring awareness of that power that you have. And we can go into lots of different ideas about how that works out. The bottom line is you're going to have to maintain control and consent and your own thought patterns. And that might be a little difficult. And then you have to use them. You can't just know something or think you know something. And the use is actually an experience. Experientially, you know whether you know or not. And to the extent that you know. So you don't. Again, that's important. I found that to be very important. You have to go through some of the steps. You have to go through some of the hardships. And they teach you stuff. And that's the only thing I think I keep listening to myself here, having the difficulties I have in the last year. Something, I'm being taught something here. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm being treated this way for whatever has happened. But there might be some valuable lesson I need to keep looking for. It hasn't made itself quite apparent yet, but who knows? Maybe tomorrow I'll get it. The Ministry of Health granted vaccine exemptions to the hundreds of among its key staff. So we have COVID swindle, and yet there was the exemption that could be given, and they knew that. And so we read here, whilst hypocritically insisting that the public be vaccinated, the Ministry of Health granted vaccine exemptions, and they didn't have to go through too much to do it. And OIAHNZ, I guess, because they dated 2 August 2023, asked the following question. According to the legislation at the time of 2021, there was an operational exemption available for those who were not getting vaccinated against COVID-19. Your website outlines the process of applying for an operational exemption under Clause 12A. How many requests were received? How many were approved by the ministry? This OIA is like our FOIA in the United States Federal for your open records request for your states. We have an article that's in PDF form to read. I'll go just to the quote here from 13 November 2021 to 26 November 2022. A total of 478 applications for significant service disruption exemption, SD, were received. 103 applications were granted, covering approximately 11,000 workers. Please note that it is not possible to provide the exact number of workers that were covered by SDs, and this is because it was possible for an organization to submit an application to cover more than one worker. And so that's a pretty interesting statement there. But so all the time they're telling you, you have to, unless you listen behind the woodshed, I think we're going to be willing to give them anyway. Over here. So, again, now we look back and we see there's more available if you were to assert it or ask for it. Or, as I was saying, you just say they don't have the authority to impose unless they can follow the local communicable disease law. There's nothing they have the authority to do. In fact, a company never has that authority if you look at local communicable disease law. The authority sits in the doctor that you have. And so if everyone was saying, well, I wanted have consent, I wanted to be able to be fully informed, I wanted to have the decision, you did. No one believes that, really. They don't respond to me when I tell them that. But you did. It was right in the code. They couldn't go beyond that. Companies have no power. All they have to do is they may identify someone that looks like an infectious principal. They can make the report. And then that study has to be done. That analysis has to be done. But the decision is with you and your doctor. Even the official doesn't have that kind of power. All they can do is find the police power concern that allows them to monitor the situation that you are doing something to not be the infectious principle to spread it around. And now we're hearing after the fact, and I didn't really want to get too much into the COVID thing this week, but that's what that's what came to me to start throwing into the mix here. When I started to see this canine thing going on, we knew that they were going to kind of beat the drum again for the next season of flu that's going to be the boogeyman. And so they seem to come together here today. But now we're going to look, now, today, from looking at the past and what's going on and the effects, a few articles of numbers of articles of harm here. Pilot warns of airline industry disaster due to COVID-19 vaccines. Captain Shane Murdoch says the air industry is poised on the precipice of disaster. A pilot for more than 40 years and a qualified air accident investigator, he has found official data that back up his claims of impending global catastrophe. He adds, when correlated, the data indicate there is an enormous problem that is having and will have a significant impact on aviation safety worldwide. Worldwide, folks. This is not a small thing. This was not an epidemic. It was not anything more than this attack that they put the name pandemic on and scared everybody. And so everybody fled into the arms of their killer, essentially, their harmer, their abuser. As he says here, there is enough evidence to be sending out red flags. Well, behind which we have one red flag going on all the time. It's not necessarily Soviet either, even though some people might think so. Big red flags going on. And all of it was, not that we had to know so much, was that the officials were doing it all wrong. And they were making decisions like, say, get all your vaccines because your canine got sick against an unknown vector, an unknown infectious agent. Makes no sense. Quickly, it makes no sense. You don't have to be a genius to figure that part out. Why did everybody fall for that? Everybody? Why did lots of people, most of the world, fall for this? There has been an unprecedented rise in the numbers of Mayday calls as tracked by the bot set up by the X account GC Flight Alerts. It posts when a pilot squawks 7,700 anywhere in the world. Between 2018 and 2019, the Mayday average was 29.1% of all distress calls. During 2022, Mayday calls increased by 272%. In the first 3 months of 2023, the increase was 386%. The graph shows that there was an instant steep increase when the vaccines were mandated to pilots. And again, I'm just going to point out, that was a federal thing, but all the communicable disease law of the United States government in Washington, D.C. is really no different than anybody else's. What I was saying, and in fact, I just remembered a couple of pilots did use what I was saying, and they caused a real problem. I don't know what the outcome was, but once they said you don't have a jurisdiction, you don't have an authority because you haven't followed these steps here in the law, it kind of threw a monkey wrench in the works for them at the point. That's the last time I'd heard from what they were doing. They would not get these vaccines. It wasn't anything. They never listened to the broadcast. They just knew someone that knew what I was saying who had talked to them. We kind of worked out how they were going to say no and not be this news here, which was all predictable in my mind. I don't know how else we get around it. I don't take any great joy in seeing that. I told you this is going to be a very sad thing to watch in the future. And moving from that harm that the pilot and analyst is looking at, now the numbers start coming in. We started to see that in the insurance assessment quickly. They started coming back. They got to be careful on their mutual funding accounts and payouts really quickly. Their bottom line gets hit immediately. And we move on here. The spy or op that was Kobe Swindle was pushing these bioweapons, as I said, would eventually be found out, but too late for fear-driven and for the fear-driven, highly suggestive type people. Again, I guess I can see that people would be suggestive that there's a danger, but the amount of people that had were unquestioning in that acceptance was astonishing to me. I would have never predicted that, actually. And a lot of my study has been for decades now, thinking that people cared to understand better what the Americans at least, were up against. When I started looking at the stuff in the 90s and people were going to jail, it's a few of my listeners know Ed and Elaine Brown. That's nothing I got involved. I watched that one, looked and analyzed what they were saying, and I said, there's nothing supporting what they're doing. They're going to get in a lot of trouble. And there's a lot of people that way. I said, I need to find out for myself how not to get in trouble. And so that I started on a whole different path, not to prove anybody wrong, just to find out what's the path. What are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to know so we don't walk into these experts or walk into someone who's a tyrant in the office, more importantly, that takes away our rights, that diminishes us, oppresses us, and makes us defenseless without us even really knowing it. We're seeing a lot of that here still going on today, but I have seen a different way for us to go, and it's allowed me to do this broadcast and explain to people who will listen how not to get themselves in too much trouble. And some of you have practiced what I've done, I've said to do, and looked into your condition. Again, case by case, you did it, and you found that it worked pretty well. You found out that you had something you can utilize and defend yourself, and at least give yourself some space, if not eliminate that official oppression against you at the moment. But most people won't do that. So here we had these bioweapons being pushed. We identified those pretty quickly behind the woodshed. You could do it yourself. I pointed out where to do it, how to do it. I still don't know much more than I was telling you on the broadcast doing my studies as we went. Except I did know the law was there and the officials were not doing that. And when they didn't do that, I told you that's where you have to go. You have to stay right there where they're not doing their duty. Research finds COVID vaccines linked to increased mortality. And this is, again, more of these threads, these tabs, there's gobs and gobs of these things that we can find. I'm not here just to say that they're bad. I'm here to say when you don't look forward into the world and say protect yourself. Think there is an expert that has more authority than you, and let them decide for you. You're going to run into these kinds of problems. And I'm going to suggest that this is not necessarily, it's not COVID. This is the response to whatever they attack people with. So just make sure that we get that correct. This would have been stopped had we insisted on due process. Data suggests COVID-19 vaccines haven't saved lives, but instead have increased all-cause mortality in 17 countries. And this gets back to the more comorbidity. And all of these treatments, all of this medicine that we talked about can do this. They don't analyze it quite so close, it seems, as I've been looking at this over the last few years, a lot closer. So we really have something we have to do. And when they're coming pressuring us against the death of our dogs or our cats or our turkeys and whatever, and they put it on us as well, and they threaten us, and they don't allow us to even ask a question, and that's the way of the world. People all everywhere are going to be in a lot of trouble, and we're going to see this because we don't know how any medicine works against our particular known or unknown disease, comorbidity, something that we may or may not have, something that's in us that's waiting for another type of imbalance to flare up. Because it's been shown that there's cancers in people's bodies, but because of a healthy immune system, it's kept in check. And nature's just looking for an opportunity. In fact, MRSA, most of the ones I've seen, the MRSA, the antibacterial type of antibiotic resistant type of bacteria, they get in by an opportunity. It's nothing special about that. They just happen to be tuned up, toughened by the ability to go against our modern medicine, which is not so good, it seems. It doesn't look forward far enough. But anyway, so we're watching all-cause mortalities, which was those comorbidities coming up. Now, also in the news, a new scientific report challenges the idea that COVID-19 vaccines have prevented deaths after researchers assessed all-cause mortality in 17 countries and found that COVID-19 vaccines didn't have any beneficial effect on reducing mortality. Instead, researchers found that the unprecedented peaks in high all-cause mortality in each country, especially among the elderly population when COVID-19 vaccines were deployed, coincided with the rollout of third and fourth booster doses. The report, published on September 17th by Correlation Research in the Public Interest, is not yet peer-reviewed, but quantified the vaccine dose fatality rate for all ages, which is the ratio of the inferred vaccine-induced death to vaccine doses delivered in a given population. Researchers found that the overall risk of death induced by COVID-19 vaccines is significantly higher than previously reported in data from clinical trials, adverse event monitoring, and cause of death statistics obtained from death certificates. And we know those weren't done so well as well either, because we found that the ones that were, when they write the death certificate, they were actually told how to write the death certificate on some of these doctors. Some of the coroners would not put the cause. There's not no way to do the cause of death, and symptoms can't cause the death. So, again, and there is no vax, folks. This is not a vax. I went through all this. It's predictable we were going to have problems. What that stuff was, I really don't know. It seemed, again, we identified it as an experiment, but and what it could do, we wouldn't know until we start to see these numbers, and we still don't know what it would do. I just see the effect as we can look through the numbers that were going on. And it's really heinous in a way. You're really not able to find out what's going on even after we see these higher numbers. All this is telling us we need to be a lot more distant from the so-called expert, from the official that claims to know so much. We're in a time now we're finding out none of them do. And I think this is a good thing. I was just hoping there was a whole lot less gullible people out there. And we're gullible in so many ways. It's not a judgment. It's just what we are. We're unprepared for the type of manipulations and cognitive warfare that's been set against us in large part. Some of us kind of see our part that we don't get involved in. And I'm not talking just the contrarian that you won't. You just fold your arms up and say, humph, I'm not doing anything. I'm not talking that. I'm talking about engaging, but engaging in the right ways. It's a whole different type of a thing as well. It takes a lot more to work through. And it's not a lot of work. As I've talked with people here in the last few weeks, of particular problems here and there, we find out it's not a difficult thing to come to the right answer once you're prepared with the information. Once you have a good foundation, a lot of answers come pretty quickly. It's on a lot of these things. And we move on to the continued harm here. Just I don't know. I guess I got to get this off. I've got lots of tabs. I only picked a few. I want to get it said that these things were harmful. Where to look? What you might be looking for? What is that pilot story to you? Maybe we got to be careful on making sure that we don't get on single pilot flights anymore. Or you inquire about their vaccination status. We heard a little bit about that earlier. People who did, the pure bloods weren't going to be. If you're going to be married, you're not going to be marrying a woman that's been vaccinated. That kind of stuff. If we're losing pilots and other operators, we heard lots of semi-trucks being, crashing there for a while. I hear it going on. We don't hear much in the news about it. We have to really keep ourselves more aware. We're now an internally harmed society as well. We don't know when that's going to happen. Like I said, I take no joy to say this was predictable. And again, it puts everybody at risk at some point, even that little bit extra. Right. And so not to throw a fear on the airline industry, you have two pilots in a big aircraft like that. They go through lots of tests. They usually have they'll have a jump seat partner in the back doing something else. But there's lots and lots of help in the skies anymore and the good quality aircraft. So it's not about being fear mongering. You don't want to be though on an aircraft where you got a shuttle flight going somewhere and you only got one pilot and maybe you find out he doesn't even know he's susceptible because he's got the jab. Maybe you want to take another flight or don't take another one at all and reduce that risk as well. It's just about your chances are increased for having damages. Going down the road, you get run over by someone. I don't know what this is going to turns out. They're finding greater numbers. It's something we need to be aware of. Government and Canada data is truly terrifying, suggesting a triple vaccinated have developed AIDS or are 5.1 times more likely to die of COVID-19 than unvaccinated. I need to clarify, nobody's dying of COVID-19. COVID-19 was strictly symptoms. They've never identified an infectious agent, but we can see the jab contained lipidized proteins, is the word for that, lipid proteins that looked like venoms, looked like poisons wrapped in a shell that the body would accept. This is what went after people, and we don't know all that it could do or that it would do in any one particular. COVID-19 was symptoms. It was never an infectious agent. They covered this whole thing up. But we can just look at whatever it was, and there was no vax, whatever the people were injected with, there's a distinct finding of difference between those and the unvaccinated. At least 74% of the vaccinated population across Canada now have full-blown vaccine-acquired immune deficiency syndrome. They call it VADS. The latest official COVID-19 figures from the Government of Canada are truly terrifying, that they show that the double vaccinated population across Canada have now lost an average of 74% of their immune system capability, and the triple vaccinated across Canada have now lost an average of 73% of their immune system capability compared to the natural immune system of unvaccinated people. So much damage has now been done that the figures show the double vaccinated population are on average of 3.8 times more likely to be infected with COVID-19 and 3.3 times more likely to die of COVID-19 than the unvaccinated population. So let me put that in more tangible concepts the way I see that the COVID-19 was either the common cold or the seasonal flu, given a name. So our immune systems have now been diminished to the point that those things will get us this many more times and more quickly when you had the COVID shot, in the minimum. We're talking about comorbidities now. We're talking our immune system is not up to par and allows or becomes, I almost wonder if it's actually becoming more accelerated. It's now fighting for its life, and so anything comes in, it fires up. And that's why we get fevers, and this is why the immune system turns on. But not to parse that too finely, we are now susceptible to illness, transmissible illnesses, if you will, seasonal things, much more if we are a vaccinated population. Totally opposite what they were selling us that it was supposed to do. But then we start looking into the scam of all that, and you start to see why. But it's even worse for the triple vaccinated population in terms of their risks of death. The official figures show that there are an average of 3.7 times more likely to be infected with COVID-19, but 5.1 times more likely to die from COVID-19 than the unvaccinated population. So the numbers are coming forward. It was predictable this way. Like I said, it's no joy here to say this. I am really concerned for people. But I hope that they have looked closely at what they've done, and they aren't trapped now by their own actions. They aren't trapped by their own rhetoric. They aren't trapped by embarrassment, and they start to figure out how to get rid of some of this stuff that we found some remedies to try and get this thing shed from your body. And I hear that there's quite a few that people are using that are working. So you have to find the one that works for you, depending on your condition. Again, it's all case by case. They really did us a disservice, too, on this point. It's the way it works, but they exploited that problem. COVID vaccine damages all hearts. Study finds radiology tests detect microcardial damage and myocardial damage in COVID-vaccinated persons. The new scientific study of Nakahara et al. Tested COVID-vaccinated people to see if they have silent changes in heart muscle function that standard radiology tests could detect. The study shows very unsettled results. The scientists measured myocardial fluorine fluorodeoxyglucose uptake. The FFDG has molecular similarity to glucose. However, 18-FFDG does not metabolize like glucose. Therefore, PET scans could detect it, and its presence shows that the heart muscles abnormally high demand for glucose, indicative of abnormal cardiac function. This was not supposed to happen. The COVID vaccine is not supposed to affect the heart in any way. It was promised to stay in the arm. And so, again, this is all it was all known before this thing, all predictable before this thing got rolled out and what was going on. I guess that's another, I'm just feeling bad about that. People would rather be afeared than actually look at this thing to try and find the right thing that they needed to do, but what was right for them. Again, this is all each one of my listener has to make the decision. My listener has to make that decision on your own. That's all there has to be done. And you might have to do it really quickly because there might be something actually important, not something made up. In a way, we can kind of dismiss this and be contrarian to it all. But again, we don't know what's out there. The people in, let's say, the Black Plague, whether there's even people now that say that that might have been fabricated. I don't want to go that far. Let's just say it's natural. It exists. People did not understand it until a long time after. So there may be things in nature that are out there. Nature's tough, looking for an opportunity. We aren't aware of what's supposed to happen, and so we have doctors putting on masks with herbs instead of realizing we should have cleaned out our beds and got rid of the fleas, and maybe the rats, if we could. Moving on here to more of the harm going on. Again, these are links you could get to read about it, start understanding. To my mind, if you understand this, why I'm even talking about this, you understand all the now at least statistical, it seems objectively statistical proof of the harm, it allows us to see how broad, when something goes wrong, how broadly it can affect us and what we might be looking at for ourselves. And again, it's all a risk decision anyway. I've told you all, I've had something hit me decades ago. Had I not taken an antibiotic, which I was against generally, had I not taken an antibiotic, I would not be here. What had got me was going to die because I had a healthy immune system. In fact, I had such a healthy immune system, I fought it for 2.5 weeks. Everybody, most normally someone gets this and they die in 4 days. So I had a heck of an immune system, but it wasn't going to surmount the ability of nature to make bacteria better faster in a system it loved to live. I needed a medicine, an antibacterial, an antiviral, and so it worked. I'm still here to talk about it. So it's not about no, it's about when you need to, and only when you need to, if you have the ability to stay ahead of it and know. We're looking at broad spectrum harms that were denied, and yet they were all admitted in the tests before you heard me talk about them, before we even got into this. Should have warned everybody off by itself, even if we didn't talk about the communicable disease law and all the duties the official has to do before they put you on that scheduling. And then you do have a choice on how you're going to mitigate that. So here we have more data coming. You can lead a horse, you can lead the hordes to data, but you cannot make them think. This page called Excess Deaths Debate Week 2023, the elephant in the room, contains information related to COVID-19. You might want to take a look at. I just throw this in for people who want to look at the charts, start to get more information for themselves. Again, maybe this may fortify you to talk with officials on how they should have done it better, and or in the future when we come up to the point when they start pulling this nonsense over your canine comes up, now zoonotic transfer from your pet. Remember that happened in Kobe swindle too with the cats, that it's going to transfer. You have the ability to stop even that nonsense. Because what they start doing is they start throwing more and more and more into the mix that's harder and harder for you to parse away, giving them more and more authority and obfuscation of the fact that they don't have the authority in the first place. They just start to take it. So, again, it's the building the techniques against the vulnerabilities of even your ignorance on how to back off some of this stuff, because every one of these instances is an error that someone took the vaccine for them. Every one. You're seeing that. And the best we can do is look after the fact and at numbers, and we hope that those statistics are good. We still want an accurate assessment of these numbers, whichever way it goes as well. This is the thing about truth. You got to know the truth. We can't have a fabricated truth. It's not truth. And these facts determine what our decisions will make. To me, this is all the kinds of analysis you would be doing looking around for anything you're going to analyze. They call it doing your due diligence. We're now looking after the fact. Like I said, I'm looking now, I'm saying we're talking so much about COVID today. I didn't really plan on doing much of this because, to my mind, we're done. People better got it. Those people probably aren't going to get it. Those that don't, those of us that are still looking and learning to discern more or can discern, trying to help others. But we're going to be continuing to do this forward, but I'm suggesting it gets very, very difficult. This digital gulag they're building is part of this thing that's underpinning this, and that's what they start to move to, and they force everybody that way. I'm hoping that my listener has enough fortitude to learn what I'm saying here, to be able to show that you're not standing where they thought you were. And they had a duty to find that out before they defamed you, essentially, before they alleged or committed extortion against you, before they coerced you. And you don't say, I'm coerced. You explain how that's a felony, that it has already happened. And I hope you just understood the subtle difference between what I tend to do, I look to do, and look for to do, opposed to anybody else. They'll say, oh, I've been coerced. Oh, I've been, you know, I think it's extortion. I'm being ripped off or whatever. No, you show it that you are, and you show it's a crime, and then you show that certainly if it's a crime, they're not supposed to do that. It's a whole different type of discussion real fast. But moving here, continuing on, the ramifications as well. What we had to go through as a society, in particular, it was difficult with the Army. So I highlight by this tab, those deaths that you've just heard about don't get your attention, and what listening to experts without definitive proof ensuring that they've followed that local communicable disease law wherever you were in the world, and they aren't making more unavoidable problems. See how this is all causing avoidable problems. Those of the military adversely affected by deciding not to take the jab. Listen here, folks. It's very interesting to watch how these folks, the government does this. Army sends letter to troops dismissed for refusing COVID vaccine amid military's recruitment woes. So they're not actually doing this because, oh, they made a mistake, and they're not even saying they made a mistake. They're just going to allow you all that are military and were tossed out on a less than honorable, they're going to allow you to go and get that record changed. So I'm talking about this as well. Those of you that are in the military know somebody who hasn't got the notice. Maybe they help them to get knowledgeable to go back and get their, if they want to maintain a discharge, get that to be changed on their record. This is what this is about. The U.S. Army notifies former soldiers separated for refusal, refusing COVID-19 vaccine that can request corrections to their discharge records. It states, quote, as a result of the rescission of all current COVID-19 vaccination requirements, former soldiers who were involuntarily separated for refusal to receive the COVID-19 vaccination may request a correction of their military records from either or both the Army Discharge Review Board or the Army Board of Correction of Military Records. Quote, individuals who desire to apply to return to service should contact the local Army, U.S. Army Reserve, or U.S. Army National Guard recruiter for more information. It concludes. An Army spokesman on Sunday, confirmed that the authenticity of the letter to the Fox News Digital. The spokesperson said that the letter dated November 1st does not explicitly ask Army members dismissed for refusing the COVID-19 vaccine to return to service. Quote, the U.S. Army has sent letters to soldiers that were discharged for refusing to take the COVID-19 vaccine, offering to correct their records. Most, if not all, of the soldiers that were kicked out for not getting the vaccine were given a discharge that was other than honorable. I just can't even, just read that, folks. I can't even think about it. I just can't think. You had people in the military, the government did that to other folks, and they had no authority to do that whatsoever. But anyway, and congratulations to you folks that stood up and did not get that in the face of that harm. And thank you for doing that. Whether you did it the way I would say it or whether you brought that forth, thank you for having the insight to just say no. And then you had to take the payment, make the payment here, and that was no good. Now they're backtracking a bit, but it's not for the reason that they were wrong. It's because it looks like they want to get more people to re-up. And somehow, I don't know, I mean, this is everyone's decision to do if you're a soldier. It seemed to me that guys or gals went in through there were really close to retirement. It may be a good thing to go back and maybe finish those few years, but that's not for me. I don't know. At any rate, I just find this abominable how they treated people, and that if the law was followed, we wouldn't be looking at this harm in society and the resentment that I would think starts to come together, and other adjectives of dismay, and about our nation, if you will, and why we even protect it. I mean, what are we doing to ourselves that our military does this to our soldiers in the context of it was supposed to be a national security thing. I mean, this is all nonsense. It was totally nonsense from the beginning. But anyway, the letter indicates that the Army is hoping these soldiers will apply to return to service. The military in general has been going through a major recruiting crisis in the past 2 years. Military intelligence seems a perpetual oxymoron, folks. Is that a variant? I don't know. But at any rate, a very interesting backtrack and removal. They did it because the mandates were removed, not because they actually didn't have the right in the beginning. And I find that a serious defect for y'all to listen toward, because that's telegraphing that the government will never, ever agree it ever made a mistake, that it ever failed to do those duties. Why it's so important for my listener to do that for themselves. And remember here, Kobe Schwindel was also about programming people to accept contactless payments to move the masses into digital gulag, I've been showing you, and perfecting the token citizenship of my listener, those that would not protect themselves. Maybe looking at this final agreement in the EU digital identity wallets expands the scope of regulations. I told you this was coming and going to do it, and they're moving right into it, even though they said, oh, we don't even know what you're talking about. Digital wallets? Digital coins? What? No, I told you it was coming. Here it is. European Parliament and the Council of EU have reached an agreement on a new framework for European digital identity, including regulation on digital ID wallets. A news release from the European Commission says that this concludes the two legislative bodies' work to implement results of the provisional political agreement, a political agreement, folks, reached in June around a legal framework for a trusted and secure digital identity for all Europeans. Well, what happened to the EU? Europeans used to be members of a nation within Europe, different nations, not the EU, which is an administrative level overriding all of that, which I understand they're going to try to make a new constitution for that. That's a very interesting thing. And it looks like the socialists are going to want to pin things down even tighter as this thing moves along. Under the new EIDAS 2.0 regulations, the EU digital identity wallet will have the extensive applications across public and private enterprise, supporting the EU in the meeting of its 2030 targets for the digitization of public services. With the full guarantee of EU law, wallet holders throughout Europe can use their linked digital ID to open bank accounts and make payments, store digital ID and biometric documents such as mobile driver's licenses or professional certificates, and expedite services in travel, healthcare, and other areas of life. What's in your master's wallet, folks, is you. This is critical to watch what's going on, how they're rolling this out. And reading here in the next Article 45 of this thing, this regulation will roll back the web security by 12 years. The EU is poised to pass a sweeping new regulation buried deep in the text of Article 45, which returns us to the dark ages of 2011, when certificate authorities, CAs, would collaborate with government to spy on encrypted traffic and get away with it. Article 45 forbids browsers from enforcing modern security requirements on certain CAs without the approval of an EU member government. Which CAs? Specifically, the CAs that were appointed by the government, which in some cases will be owned or operated by the self-same government. That means cryptographic keys under the one government control could be used to intercept HTTPS communications. That's supposed to be a secure encrypted communication throughout the EU and beyond. This is a catastrophe for the privacy of everyone who uses the Internet, but particularly for those who use the Internet in the EU. Browser makers have not announced their plans yet, but it seems inevitable that they will have to create two versions of their software, one for the EU with security checks removed, and another for the rest of the world with security checks intact, such as they may be or may not be. Remember, they go through that for Open DNS, and they're going right through Google. That's the other nonsense, and that's Firefox. But you hear right there, they're just going to, there's nothing going to be private, secret, or anything. Your life is controlled by a bureaucrat. And the EU's rolling that out, and I don't know what more to say. I've been predicting this thing going on for many, many, many years, and there's not much more than a grumble about it. And let's see what, how people in that digital gulag, what they think, where you become the product. As I said, you are sitting in the master's card, the master's wallet, which is the government, and what they allow or don't. I told you all this is going to be happening. Ron Paul's little symbol sign, the government doesn't like competition. Absolutely. This was a writing on the wall long years ago. Funny, 2011, that was the time, and I kind of lost that point. I was moving into 2011, I think I was doing broadcasting, and I said I was looking at a darkness. And I went through that year, 2011, mentioned right here, and it caught my mind again when I just read it, that went through that oblivious to something going on, and yet we passed through something in 2011. This is coincidentally mentions 2011 as being the dark ages that we're entering back into here these over a decade later. So we have the digital gulag, you're the product now. Remember, your whole life and all your needs are sucked into this digital wallet. What's in your wallet, folks? They've been talking to us, advertising, all these years. And I've talked to, in the past about the barcode, a global product tracking system now used as the QR code. I mentioned all these things. Remember, too, the tracking and tracing through the COVID swindle they wanted and the cashlessness. They didn't want a contact payment. They want contactless. They've been programming everyone's mind to accept it, and people are, is the fascinating thing. It's like they're not afraid of the potential prison that they're putting themselves in for the convenience, it says. It's all there for us. It's simply, we're going to get rid of credit cards now. You just don't have to have anything like that. Just give me your eyeball. Aussies fume. We know Australia is like taking the leading edge of this now, but now we'll see what their people are doing. Aussies fume over being asked to use QR codes at restaurants. Remember, you're not going to be able to get much of any services, certainly not government, without that number, that bar, that mark, if you will. And I can't see it anything more than a beast system, as we've heard before. But here we have people that are experiencing this already. They're beginning to. Aussies either love or hate this one divisive restaurant trend, but it doesn't look like it will be going anywhere at any time soon. Quote, went to a restaurant earlier in Sunny Coast, asked for a menu, and the only menu they had was on the door and was directed to a QR code menu on the table. Quote, it's for this effing web app called Meandu, which proceeded to charge a 6.5% venue surcharge, a 2% payment processing fee, and then they had the audacity to ask for a tip, 10, 15, 25%, as a cherry on top. The diner wrote in a post to the social media. They added how sick they were of technology supposedly intended to solve an issue, actually, quote, making everything worse and more inconvenient for everyone, everybody. So, folks over there, you Aussies, walk away. Don't you walk away. Stop. It's simple. Don't get engaged. Don't get involved. Challenge them. Again, we have a little bit better. Well, if you have the ability to pay cash, like we have these requirements to pay cash, you have the ability to hold on right there at least. But anyway, so we start fuming over this. So look at the way they can charge us now for all kinds of things, and it all comes automatic. And you agree by just swiping your phone in front of that. It's so simple. You have your phone, right? So anyway, this is the sustainable goals thing all coming down on us. This is what COVID swindle was supposed to help usher in as well, get us contactless, get us to go to digital. We accept it better. We can stay away from everybody. But to hear, maybe there's a ray of hope for my listener. We resist the temptations of convenience. Maybe finally the green utopia is running out of energy. As I direct you to a link to Peter St. Onge, in his video called Green Energy Dream is Dead. Recovering professor, he says of himself here about the spectacular realization occurring when fraud meets economic realities. And the one company that did its due diligence avoiding the massive ongoing failure or as you have heard me talk to you about Behind the Woodshed for years, listen to Peter St. Ange and let him explain to you how there is realities coming to meet the wrong expectations and why you need to have a principle in your life on an objective basis. And you may have to weather the storm, if you will, of the climate, political climate change that's being foisted on you. But if you don't hold fast, you'll be blown away by it, and yet it's still invalid. And there's economic realities that Professor St. Ange talks to about these things, and he gives us a very nice and concise discussion of looking at the way to look at the world. That there, I've told you a long time, these green religion things, the sustainable goals, were somebody's technocratic, socialistic, communistic idea. They're a suggestion for you to abandon your existing government for what they have to do, but there's realities. And a lot of times it's economic, and a lot of times if we look carefully and over a time, we'll see whether it was good or bad. When it's good or bad for the economy, that's good or bad for you generally as a nation. Auto execs are coming clean. EVs aren't working. The green utopia couldn't work. It's not going to work. It's only because people will not resist it that it's going to continue to work, and they just shove it down your throat. I've explained this inside the government right now. Anywhere you go, the system has been built up in the laws to accept this nonsense, and nobody said no. But auto execs are coming clean. Our EVs aren't working. I've touched this myself. Enough said. I don't really have to go more. The utopia isn't. Green, go broke. Clean energy fails a basic economics test. This was Covey swindle as well. This is all those things that they've been putting together to bring in a global control system. They don't work ultimately. And people who are quiet against this are going to be brought into the thing that doesn't work, the machinery that doesn't work. It's going to be pretty tragic. I hope people are coming around. And I guess while I'm reading some of these, the awareness is finally coming, what I've been suggesting for many, many, many years, decade or so, about how this is really just a facade for just a global core control. And it uses that cognitive warfare to soften you up and get into your mind and get into your actions, or your inaction is as important. Clean energy stocks plummeted as renewable energy projects proved to be too expensive, threatening America's environmental aspirations. Why do I talk about this second? Because when the audio exec said the EVs aren't working, it's because they need to make them work. You have to have so-called clean energy, and there is no such thing, first of all. Secondly, it's not dependable like this thing called hydrocarbons. And so don't underestimate the problem, the mind control that went on conflating, mashing together pollution control and this thing called climate change, which is not about the weather. It's a political shift. It's a political transformation of societies. The once glorified clean energy stocks are now, again, this is another type of a utopia they think is going on. It's speculation. Everyone's driven by their greed to make a little bit more. They just don't want to settle down and just enjoy life the way it should be and try to have a stable future that they work into. No, we got to continue more discussion and question and allow experts to tell us where they need us to go to drown ourselves eventually, because that's how profits are made, apparently. Once a glorified clean energy stocks are now facing their darkest days, plunging the industry into a financial abyss that threatens Americans' ambitious environmental aspirations. These are all fraudulent at some point when you get to climate change. Pollution, that's a different issue. But we can solve that. See, that's something tangible. And that's done by a certain process as well. But we don't do that when we're looking at a green utopia that is hitting the economic wall. As I've told you, you can't have governments stealing from people called taxes and then handing them through some sort of subsidy to promote something that has nowhere to go. It's going to have to end at some point. And this is what's gone on with these green subsidies. The much-touted green revolution is looking more like a red alert as a sector hemorrhages tens of billions in market value. Blame it on rising interest rates, the industry's newfound nemesis. So now the Fed may be helping us here. The higher rates have not only increased costs, but also put a damper on consumer enthusiasm leading to a nosedive in stock valuations for companies that once promised a green utopia but are now struggling to turn a profit. It seems the only thing rising faster than the hopes for a clean energy revolution is the cost. But hey, who needs affordable, reliable energy when we've got grand climate goals, right? Despite the EU and US governments offering billions of tax credits and subsidies to support the so-called green transition, from Russia, oil and gas investors are losing confidence based faster than you can say renewable. Again, these subsidies and tax credits are subsidies, welfare to these folks. You can't do production that way. You can't do production on a subsidized level. So, what's the moral of the green tale? It turns out going green is not just about saving the planet. It's an expensive affair. As the renewable energy stocks hit rock bottom, analysts are left wondering, is it time to buy, or is the green dream truly over? Seems like even the green warriors can't escape the unforgiving reality of the market. And so, again, this is a tale that was predictable. We could buy into it as they want us to do and not really say much, or we should stand up and not have to go through the hardship that's coming because of all this. Climate Change Group branded a criminal organization. More truths start coming out about the tactics of all doing this, and it's causing people to back off, and I'm thinking it's a good thing. Again, not that we can't use technology. In my history, I still agree with electric cars, if used correctly, everything has its place. I'm an advocate of EVs, if you will, but not necessarily the way they're pushing them as the sole means of transportation. And then, if you're not tied into an alternative grid structure, you don't take quite as advantage as you can. And that alternative so-called green production of energy is not green at all, not green whatsoever, if you look at the actual costs. I guess you can suggest that, oh, it doesn't do carbon dioxide very much, but that's a lie, too, when you look at the mining that has to go on and the trucks that run diesel to get the mining, and you can't do those mining operations without expenditure of fossil fuels. It just takes that much energy. It's not providable to the green environment, which requires energy and the cost of energy in order to make. At any rate, the dead end at start. And yet it could be a part of an energy system. I have absolutely zero problem with that. But you find out if you do it that way, these green systems are very expensive, and they require the subsidies, which means they're not viable in the market. And then you are backed up against a lie about what they are. But that's the real problem. It's not like there is a real existential threat unless you buy into the lie. We have threats. We have to resolve some problems. We have problems to deal with, but it's not the level of global governmental transformation to an ideology, to a new religion, let's say. Climate Change Group's legally branded criminal organization, a German court, has ruled that the activities of the Last Generation constitute a threat. Last Generation is the group's name, that constitute a threat to public safety and order. The Last Generation Climate Change Group has been designated as a criminal organization by the Munich Regional Court, which announced the ruling on Thursday after considering 10 complaints from the climate activists over searches and seizures. That's an interesting door to go through, isn't it? The court dismissed the complaints, ruling that the Last Generation meets the requirements to be considered an organized crime group, arguing that committing crimes does not necessarily need to be the only purpose of a group to be designated as such. The court said the group's activities, including disrupting traffic and damaging property, constitute a significant threat to public safety and order. And so we in the United States looked at what's going on with Antifa and all that, and the BLM, and we wonder what? And this court says, yeah, you can't commit crime and call yourself an organization that deserves to be free from being designated a criminal. No, you're a criminal. You do criminal things, you should be considered a criminal. No, the seizures were correct. And so, very interesting, the change going on now, finally, after all these years, like 4 years before we see the harms of Comey swindle being rectified, which aren't going to be rectified in that case, can be rectified. And this one in an interesting way, the people that claim to be the victims, the criminals claiming to be the victims are told that they're criminals and they're not a victim. And I think we can look at some other things going on in the world with the same example. We see the victim, the one screaming victim, the screaming self-defense doesn't deserve it. BRICS asked to label Israel a terrorist state. And as we start to move along, we get a little bit more. It's still just talk, though, here, folks. While people die, it's still just talk. But interesting, isn't it? The Iranian president requested that West Jerusalem's alleged war crimes be investigated and the blockade by Gaza be broken. And how much less an organized crime group constituting a public threat to public safety and order is than the Zionists openly admittedly committing genocide here in the world. The Zionista occupying belligerent regime, we can call them, there's international law of war authority that they are a belligerent regime. And if anyone thinks occupying a belligerent regime is merely ad hominem, you just got to go read about occupying belligerents. Pursuant to international law, occupying belligerents are considered regimes, not democracies. And so, again, what I think I bring is a ton of reading, or years and years of reading that stayed in my mind, and I think that seems to be the main difference between when I'm looking at something and a lot of other people might be looking at it. I have a different way of approaching things. My vocabulary, if you will, incorporates these things as a natural thing. It's not something I add on later. It interprets through this. When I look at what's going on in Israel, I see them as a belligerent occupying power. Occupying powers has got me to quickly say they don't have a right of self-defense. I don't even need to see much more of anything else. And so then, but when you see the rest of it, it all conforms to that definition. And so Iran is doing an interesting thing here. Iran is correct. The Zionist Federation, remember, Allah, His Majesty from the UK, is a terrorist regime. Not unlike a climate change criminal. Not even deadlier, but it's even deadlier than the climate change individual. In the immediate, and it's unaccountable at this point. At least the climate change group, a criminal organization, got accountability there, that we got, the people around there, Germany did. But with Israel, no, we don't get that. With the Israelis, we don't get that. Reading from the article, it is necessary that this fake regime be recognized as a terrorist regime and its army be regarded as a terrorist organization. Right again, fake regime, a political movement from the late 1800s using the Jewish people as a cover. Human shields, folks. It's despicable what we were watching every day, and the nations of the world watch this as well, sitting on their hands, as it were. Okay, nations don't have hands. Okay, but yes, they're sitting there, a lot of talk, nobody doing any action. So when you look around, under international law, any nation providing funds to the terrorist regime has jurisdiction to extradite anyone of the Zionista regime for the war crimes when we watch the United States, when they get their money from there, when they don't, you're watching the United States become an accessory. The United States is not, and UK as well, not defending democracy. And when Netanyahu says Zionists' war is America's war, he's saying America is an accessory to genocide and war against international law and international law norms. That's all that you're seeing there. It doesn't take me but an instant to listen to those words and put it in what I believe is the proper perspective through my study. It's not a question to me. It certainly says a whole lot different than the words seem to indicate. But you put them in the proper status and you realize what they're doing and what they're saying. And we have a real problem. As the people of the United States, we're being represented by this nonsense, by this crime, ongoing crime. And Iran is calling it out. But, quote, with regards to the constant crimes committed by the racist nature of the fake Israel regime, free nations of the world expect all governments, especially BRICS members, to immediately put the issue of the severance of the political, economic, and military ties with the regime high on the agenda, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi continued. Israel has killed over 13,500. I think it's up to almost 15,000 now as of the day today of reading this. Palestinians in Gaza since declaring the war on Hamas last month, including at least 5,600 children, according to Palestinian health officials. At least 6,000 more residents of the enclave are said to be missing. So how many more harmed than the judicially recognized criminal climate change group in Germany than that Iran only calls for the designation, doing nothing more? Just as the rest of the complicit nations sit on their laurels, as it were, they don't have hands, they don't have the rest of it, but nation, they sit there by just talk. Nothing's actually happening. International law allows for action. It's pretty interesting. And as I've said, there is nothing that I've found in international law to allow Zionista Federation to lawfully exist in Palestine, let alone as a two-state imposition to internationally wedge foreign interests, themselves terrorist occupying regimes, upon the people pre-1922 Palestine through until today. Now, I've talked about this quickly on another couple broadcasts. So the interests that allow it are the foreign interests. They're also a terrorist occupying power. This comes in, they're opposing a two-state solution, but the agreements between the parties, if we give the state of Israel the recognition that the nations of the world gave it, which they should not have given it to it, the state of Israel has agreed that this would be based in the determination of the Palestinian people themselves. An two-state imposition, it does not, it breaches that agreement right there. But you don't hear anybody really talking about that. And we also have the knowledge that it looks like the Palestinians are in the way. For all the interests, maybe why lots of nations are sitting on their hands, except the Yemen country, they're sending their missiles 2,000 miles, I don't know what they do, but they're at least stepping up and trying something that they think is going to be something that will help their brethren, I suppose. So we have from the green criminal irrationality to its rational-sounding red Soviet complement, still focused on economy here at the end of the day, genocide notwithstanding, we can move through the nations and start watching what's going on through the world despite this atrocity going on, despite there's no support in law at all, in norms, in favor, in reasonability, rationality, and a criminal organization going after innocent people while the world watches. We don't even get the justice of Germany just dispense. Compliments here, still focused on the economy. We have Putin questions why world leaders not shocked by the mass death of Gaza children. And again, these are discussions, and we went to BRICS because that's the Global South and all this other thing. It's all part of the dynamic of the world today, and everyone has this opinion and they want to discuss it, and he's asking the rationality. We're asking, well, why isn't there more shocked detonations? Russian President Vladimir Putin questioned Wednesday why would world leaders are not shocked by the words of the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres that Gaza has turned into a huge children's cemetery. Remember, over 5,600 children, and that's the ones they found, buried. Over-enthusiastic Israel as well. I think we're going to find that out. I think it was said that this was a way a false flag set up to get Israel to do that, but I'm still seeing that this was Hamas's last gasp to stay viable, and they did a really strategically well-planned thing. They anticipated all the political mentality of Israel, and they have exploited every bit of its negatives. They knew Israel better than themselves here. It took years to figure this one out. And so we're watching that happen. But children are dying. Putin's asking why aren't there more shock? And this is a rational and an empathetic response to the atrocity in Palestine. But then he adds, like it's just dead, not doing anything. There's giving us the information of what's going on. What these people, Iran going to BRICS, Russia going to BRICS, what this economy is about, what I've talked about. They talk about it here. It's all focusing and back into what we talk about. They're climate criminal organizations that are running this thing, and their national leaders are sitting on their hands not shocked, because it's not about Palestine. It's about what they're going to do in the future relative to being part of the crew, part of the group, part of the in crowd, and that crowd is kind of shifting at this point. He adds this little segue having to do nothing with the plight of the Palestinians or the children. Quote, now the situation in the global economy requires, and in the world as a whole, collective consensus decisions that reflect the opinion of the overwhelming majority of the international community, both developed and developing, Putin emphasizes. Quote, our country will continue to contribute to the balanced achievement of sustainable development goals and preservation of the climate and biodiversity of our planet, the digital transformation of the world economy, and ensuring food and energy security, Putin stressed. Russia will continue to contribute to sustainable development, digital transformation of the world and economy, Putin emphasized. What does that have to do with the death of kids and the burials of kids in Palestine by the hand of Israel? Nothing. I told you, they're running a secondary scam underneath all this, Ukraine, all of this stuff. No, this is a leader who's running their country right into the future gulag. Perfect. He's explained it right there. What does that have to do with anything about the children and being shocked with that? No, he throws this in. Let us know. It's tucked in this little story, so maybe we'll miss it, too. If anyone thinks that Russia is above destroying people through technocratic methods toward humanistic sustainable goals, that statement settles all questions right there. That is also to say, his condemnation of most of mankind is not different than, say, the United States, where whose current Soviet-era climate czar, the mass killer John Kill Farming Kerry, promotes the same agenda in a different words. We've heard him talk about this. And they use the word czar. How much more red Soviet can we be talking? We move from green utopia to actually red Soviet impositions. The United States EPA Environmental Protection Agency is the very pillar of the UN globalist system Putin is relying on. The Environmental Protection Agency is protecting the sustainable political environment, not protecting my listener in any life, liberty, or pursuit of happiness or property. Putin's right with it. If you think they're different between America on the governmental side, the governance side, relative to Russia. No, they're all handshaking in the back room. They're all doing the same thing while they war over there in Ukraine, which is a geopolitical problem, totally different. And moving from the lifeless green utopia through the red glow of neo-sustainable Soviet to the blazing red inferno of the other side of hell on Earth, burn Gaza, burn now, is what the top Israeli MP Nisim Valturi has argued. His country is saying that it's being too humane towards Palestine. Talk about a criminal mentality. I'm floored. Burn Gaza now, nothing less. Don't allow fuel in. Don't allow water in until the hostages are returned. So here, that's what he says. First off, the Palestinian people are not animals to be treated either humanely or inhumanely, folks. Keep track of this. Remember, the word human was invented around 1400s by the Catholic Church. It doesn't talk about man or mankind, and I've exposed in the law how they make distinctions, how the administrative side takes on the human, but the law talks to mankind. Fascinating. If you pay attention, you start seeing this stuff. A different view that you get to get. Secondly here, the Palestinians are members of mankind, each with their own sovereignty, lawful inhabitants of the long-acknowledged Holy Land. You got to keep track of us, all this, folks. When you read these folks, these idiots, these criminals talk like this. They want to promote that they've got something going, and they want you to buy into it. The scorched earth, burn Gaza policies of the invading, usurping Zionista political creature are not only unworthy of mankind, but Palestinians, as a society of mankind, have the right of self-determination over and about their land, as is recognized in international law and agreements that the artifice of the Zionist Federation, creature of political fantasy, these Zionist animals are subject to. The Zionist is a political creature. It's an animal, if you will. It's a creature. It is not part of mankind. It has nothing that it can actually offer. I just say that, and I say the people of Palestine, the children, we are allowing a legality to kill them. And I don't even know where to go beyond. That's just, what else is there to say than that's absolutely wrong? Just absolutely wrong. I don't need to go really much farther. But the dignity and respect acknowledged by the world in the Palestinian people through those international norms and agreements, as any member of mankind ought to be, the Zionista dishonorable criminal pressure and occupying power claims to the contrary notwithstanding. These people in Palestine are members of mankind. They had a territory. They deserved, however they were organized or not, they deserved to be protected, and they weren't. The Palestine I'm talking about now, as it was understood without getting into the, a lot of people want to make arguments over, oh, it was historically this or that. It's just whatever it was acknowledged at the time. I've talked about this before. But this is a, this scorched earth policy is said by someone who has, is not affiliated with a movement. It's not even human. It's not even mankind. And we don't take cognizance of this. I think the missing links of this for us mentally, psychologically, is why we, how we fall as people looking on, how we fall and we diminish ourselves. And part of the things I talk about behind the woodshed is to try and bring back that mankind in us, that thing that we ought to be doing, those legality out there. And there's some of the legality is purposeful, but this is, it's beyond, it's there's nothing legal about it, actually. It's an imposition. People are doing it, but they don't have the actual statuses they need. And the abandonment of that in us looking on is one of our problems. We wouldn't let it, we would have a better, more quickly acting principle. Maybe like the Yemenis are doing right now. Again, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know how they're actually making a force and effect, but they've decided to do what they could. And I have to give that over to them, that part. Not that I'm saying I like war, but put yourself in the place that the Palestinians are. You're down into, you've been placed up from your, you have a piece of property, and someone invades you some night and shoves you into a little storage shed in the back, and then they start throwing big boulders on the storage shed. How would you feel? I don't think you'd feel too good about it. Well, maybe an inferior analogy, but that's kind of what's going on. Make this private to you, and you're going to see the, all the principles violated, and all of a sudden that there's no right to defense by these criminals. Now, criminal is such a diminished word here. They're doing such a wrong in the world, I can't even get it. But let's compare what the genocidal Zionist has to say again here with a document I found. This is Lesson 9, the Law of Armed Conflict. This is where one of the documents that refers to a belligerent occupation. As I talked before, we have a belligerent regime. We're going to read through a bit of this just to show you. Again, I'm just not talking. I'm just not referring to something that's substantial. There's things in the world that are known that everyone understands. The nations understand. The diplomats understand. The officials understand. It's how it works. And when they don't, they have problems. And when they don't do it, these things, then you work into what you have over there in Palestine. And then it's unaccountable. That's even the worst part. The aim of this lesson, it says here, is to explain that the duties and rights of a belligerent power when it occupies foreign territory of a civilian population in the occupied territory. This lesson will cover, one, definitions, two, the legal position of civilian population, and three, the duties and rights of the occupying power. And so my listener can get this document and read more. I'm just going to read the first few pages here quickly just to touch base, just to give you a real basic foundation. This is something real that's acknowledged for a long time. I've even talked about the Lieber Code. It was made into the Hague regulations, the Hague Convention in the 1899s and 1907. So this is not even outside of what I've talked about before. This is directly inside what I've talked about for decades. It just happened to be on a specific subject of belligerent occupation, and the word belligerent here is kind of an interesting word. You got to keep really put your thinking cap on when you're using these words in international law to keep the sides and the parties all together and understood. But here we go, the introduction, the law of belligerent occupation, which for now on we will refer to simply as the law of occupation, governs the relationship between the occupying power on the one hand and the wholly and partially occupied state of its inhabitants, including refugees and stateless persons, on the other. It is applicable only in international armed conflicts. The first codification of international rules relating to occupation can be found in the Hague Regulations of 1899 and 1907, which themselves were built on customary international law. Many lessons drawn from the crimes committed in the occupied territories of Europe and the Far East during the Second World War were subsequently incorporated into the Fourth 1949 Geneva Convention, which codifies in substantially part the modern international law application of to occupation. The law was further strengthened by the fundamental guarantees laid down in Article 75 of the Additional Protocol 1 of 1977. Elements of international human rights law are also applicable. In the relationship between the Hague regulations and the GC4 is clarified in Article 154, GC4, the GC supplements, Section 2 and 3 of the regulations. reading through all these details, because this is not just ad hoc ideas. These people sat down, they really think about how this is going to work, and they're doing it with disparate types of nations, cultures, and ideals and thoughts, and there has to be a neutral obligation, a neutral objective basis, and this is what these discussions are trying to do. So we can think of them in that regard as well. Definitions. Territory is considered occupied when it is placed under the authority of the hostile army. The occupation extends only to the territory where this authority has been established and can be exercised. The law on occupation applies to all cases of partial or total occupation, even if such occupation does not encounter armed resistance. So that's a reading. I want you to remember what I've said about the United States being an occupied territory. Okay? Put your thinking hat on as I'm reading through this, and see if they don't, if you can't mark all the boxes, but for us in the United States. But here, for what we're looking for, generally an occupied, a belligerent occupation here, the essential ingredient for the applicability of the law of occupation is therefore the actual control exercised by the occupying forces. Occupation ceases when the occupying force are driven out or evacuate the territory. The territory has been invaded but not occupied when the enemy armed forces stay or fight on it, but the enemy authority is not yet established. 2. Legal position of the civilian population. The civilian population of an occupied territory owes no allegiance to the occupying power. As we will see later in detail, it cannot be forced to fight its own country, be involved in any way with the armed forces, or give military assistance to the occupying power. It is in many ways difficult to separate the legal rights of the civilian population from the duties of the occupying power, i.e., a duty from the latter is often a right for the former. In this section, we will therefore cover the general legal position and rights of civilians in occupied territory. We will cover more detailed aspects later. Again, this is a lesson 9 of many lessons I didn't look and see. Just happened to find this to place what we're listening to in the Middle East over there and what's going on between those two factions, the Palestinians and the Israelis. Civilians are at all times entitled to respect for their persons, honor, family rights, religious convictions, and manners and customs. Their private property is to be protected. And anybody who's been looking over there at what Israel's doing against the Palestinians will see every one of those things have been violated. But I just want to read this and not do more analysis yet. Just want to point out there's application as I'm reading through. You can just think about, apply what I just read and see what is that going on over there or not. And if it's not, we got a real problem. And I'm going to say, well, I'll just let you think whether or not, come to your determination of whether this is being violated or not. Any discrimination for reasons of race, nationality, language, religion, convictions, religious convictions or practices, political opinion, social origin or position or similar are considered is unlawful. The civilian population is in a tense and vulnerable position. The law states that it must be humanely treated in all circumstances and protected from any acts of violence, including third parties. The occupying power may not only put in place such measures of control and security as may be necessary as a result of the conflict. Collective penalties, measures of intimidation, terrorism, hostage-taking are prohibited. The legal rights of the inhabitants of occupied territory cannot be curtailed by any agreement or any arrangement between the occupying power and authorities of the occupying power on territory. This is intended to prevent national authorities from being put under pressure to make concessions which might not be the population's best interest or weaken its legal rights. Interjection. Didn't I just say that relative to the self-determination of the Palestinians? That's what that paragraph says. They have the right of self-determination that's being interfered with by Israel, the Zionists, and the United States, and the UK, His Majesty. Reading on. Similarly, the inhabitants of the occupied territory cannot renounce their rights under the Fourth Geneva Convention. This, again, is a safeguard that prevents the occupying power from exploiting the vulnerability of the occupied territory by exerting undue pressure to undermine and weaken the protections which the law affords. And we all laugh, because affords isn't protected. Individual or mass forcible transfers or deportations of civilian population from an occupied territory are prohibited. What are they doing now? Moving on here, just reading. Specific areas may be temporarily evacuated if warranted by the security of the population or imperative military necessity. Generally speaking, the population may not be evacuated to locations outside the occupied territory, again, unless this is only the only option available. In that case, the evacuees must be returned to their homes as soon as the security situation allows. Just listen to what's going on in the news, violation after violation of each one of those parts. In any such evacuation, the occupying power must ensure the greatest practical extent the proper accommodation is made available for evacuees, male and female. The move to temporary holding area is carried out in a satisfactory condition of hygiene, health, safety, and nutrition, and that the members of the same family are not separated. What did we just hear about the journalist's family being destroyed by bombs minutes after he did his report? The occupying power must not deport, transfer parts of its own civilian population into the territory it occupies. Settlements, anyone? If the occupying power considers it necessary for imperative reasons of its security to take security measures concerning civilians, it may at the most subject them to assigned residence or to internment. Bombing their places to oblivion isn't that, is it, folks? Assigned residence could mean their own homes or elsewhere. As with the temporary evacuations described above, the stay should be as short as the security situation warrants, and this is in turn should be provided with adequate conditions, food, etc. Resistance to occupation. After effective occupation of territory, members of the territory's armed forces who have not surrendered organized resistance movements and genuine national liberation movements may resist the occupation. If they do so, they must distinguish themselves from the civilian population, or on the basis of a GP1 regulation, at least carry their weapons openly during attacks and deployments. I need to interject here. We have a right of open carry in the United States. When you find out you're living in an occupied territory, that takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But you don't have to have permission. It's just agreed in international law. You're part of a resistance movement. How do you like that? Civilians who take a direct part in such hostilities lose their protection against attack from the time of their direct participation, but not their civilian status. If they do not participate directly in hostilities or no longer do so, for example, if they are hors de combat, they are protected against attacks. You know this from the lesson on the conduct of operations. Indirect support for the resistance movement, such as providing information or non-military supplies, does not constitute taking a direct part in hostilities. So those engaged are civilians and therefore protected against attack. They may, however, be in contravention of security laws passed by the occupying power. In that case, they can be tried and sentenced, or their freedom of movement restricted. And I think I'll end that right there and move on. I think there's a lot of information that people don't use when they're writing, having an opinion. But if you apply these laws, these rules, how you function, how you identify, you know them when you see them? Yeah, you apply it that way. Then you can identify the propriety of either side's acts or not. And I think it's important for us to have a basis to do that. Like anything, we have to have a solid basis. And again, we can have some errors, but for the most part, we do have a basis to start from, not just ideas, what we think is supposed to happen. And then this violation to the Palestinians, that I think is sits in writing those documents, complete violation of the Palestinians due to the knowing criminal disregard of the Palestinians and their right to self-determination in Palestine, not merely Gaza now. I'm talking about Palestine. As historic, they say the borderlines that were agreed to be called Palestine by the old maps. By the time of 1922, it was understood, no questions, till you get today. This has now caused a potential permanent obstruction of the Palestinians toward a lawful, peaceful integration into Palestine with the Jewish people, not the Zionists, but the Jewish people who may have wanted to intend to live in Palestine. Not the Zionista creature, but the people who may have a claim or just want to live there, like we have immigration. But this was to be determined by the Palestinians, not the so-called State of Israel. Palestinians believe that they can't coexist with Israel. It's broken, folks. This should have never happened like this. So now we have to look at the reality. Look what these people have done. Well, I've said this thing needs to be returned back to the time earlier. Move all the Zionists off. And if they want to live there, they come in through whatever the Palestinians say is their immigration policy, essentially. Palestinians believe they can't coexist. How else can you coexist now? It's not really Jews, though, is it? It's really this Zionista political movement that they can't coexist with. So there's still a way in here. If we properly designate all these things, many Palestinians say that they will never forgive Israel for its military action in Gaza, according to a survey. A significant majority of Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza say that they don't envision a future where they can coexist peacefully alongside Israel, according to the findings of a poll. The densely populated Gaza enclave has been subjected to an unprecedented bombardment for more than 5 weeks, as well as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vow to eliminate Hamas in response to the military group's cross-border attack October the 7th. But amid signs of an increasing erosion of international support for the Israel military response, which aid organizers say is worsening an already alarming humanitarian crisis, the besieged strip of land, a large majority of Palestinians have indicated that they will be unable to forgive Israel for its actions. So, and who would blame them, irrespective of every present reference to any international support or not? I mean, the West, including His Majesty, took the path of insults, as the Britain monarchy, if historically known to do, instead of the path of peace. So this is where it gets us to genocide when you do it that way, as the crown and king and the church, understand that connection, intended, aided and abetted by the rest of the world, in support of which is now eroding under the light of a greater truth. And the indiscretions of the world here. This is what we're really looking at. There was a way, a peaceful path through this. It didn't adopt that at all, and no one insisted on it. That's all I can ask you, folks. Be not of the world. You see what of the world does. In international law, it is the duty of a nation to protect the oppressed, even outside its borders. Yemen didn't hesitate, which I'm just fascinated by. Again, 2,000 miles away, how are they being effective? But they're doing what they can in order to try and say you don't have a right to do this. And we have now this ongoing story, Israel or not, what we know about the car carrier hijacked by the Houthis in the Red Sea. Fascinating how far away this was. But commerce is king, and the economy is important. And if you can interfere with an economy in trying to stop an oppressor, you have the right to do so. Yemen's Houthi militia seized the Galaxy Leader commercial car carrier vessel in the southern Red Sea over the weekend, believing the ship to be linked to Israel. The IDF assured the ship is not Israeli, but where was the ship sailing from? Where was it headed? Who owns it? Who's on board? Sputnik did a bit of digging and find comprehensive answers. So, in fact, you read the story, it was hijacked and seized by the rules of war, confirming Yemen is at war. This is a subtle little thing that's not really being mentioned. Yemen declared war on Israel, so let's got to hold that out there, and it's as well as the fact that seems to get little coverage here on its own regard. The reference to the hijacking is dismissive of the expanding condition, which can have adverse economic effects, which is reasserted where we can read in the article, the Galaxy Leader's seizure. Remember, they said hijacking in the title, but this is a seizure, is part of a broader strategy of the Houthis, whose area of control is in Yemen, or over 2,000 kilometers from Israel, not miles, to reach out and touch Tel Aviv using the tools of asymmetric warfare. Ultimately, the Galaxy Leader seizure signals another escalation in the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. So what intrigued me more about this story for my listener is it forms a thumbnail overview of what people need to consider when living under presumptive commerce of the world. If you look, kind of read this article and look for these things, to any listener making a big hay over maritime and admiralty, or any of you that give importance to being exposed to some language contortion such as Jordan Maxwell, I think his name was, where he did this interesting use of language, but then that was run with without proper basis. All of you that would do that, you need to read this story. Understand that if you're presumed a vessel, look at what the world, people in the world do when they're actually dealing with vessels, and take affirmative proper steps to rebut the unnatural presumption that you're a vessel. And this is the thing about being presumed innocent. They presume you to be a commerce entity. And in Admiralty or Maritime, this is an interesting story to read to see what people did and what they do in the world regarding ships, vessels. The ship's port of registry is Nassau, the Bahamas, and it flies the Caribbean island national flag for convenience. Bahama registry vessels operate tax-free. Notice the nested identities, but it will be important for my listener here to first establish to protect the status of the originator, such as being accepted or immune. In this case, the Israelis are not from the immunity of the taxation. And this is where we start from in United States law, relative to tax law and all the problems. And you have to take a really slow read of that and not make assumptions about it. The ship's port of registry is in Nassau. It's underneath a tax-free registration. According to Lloyd's list of intelligence, the ship is managed by Stamco Ship Management Company, LTD, based on Piraeus, Greece, which is registered owner of Ray Shipping, Incorporated of the Isle of Man, the British Crown dependency. Lloyd says that the vessel is owned by Ray Shipping, LTD, a Tel Aviv-based shipping company operating a global fleet of 65 vehicle carriers. The ship's direct owners are listed as Rami and Yael Unger, a pair of wealthy Israeli businessmen known for their involvement in the funding of the political campaign. So an Israeli does own the ships despite the Zionista government's denials. And so we go on more information on this Israeli oligarch who appears to be associated with the Mossad, Israel Billions, Mossad, and Houthi revenge. Why was a cargo ship seized in the Red Sea? And we can read this story. Rami Unger is a billionaire whose vessels were recently hijacked. They're actually seized under international law, not hijacked like a pirate. And what does the Israeli intelligence have to do with him? You can read this story that ties him in. And maybe the Yemenis were not so wrong here. This is a, I don't know what purpose it has, but it is in fact an Israeli-owned ship. The military seizure under the rules of war, or Yemeni pirates hijacking a boat of ransom, sounds like fair prize to me. Prize is something under international law. You got booty if it's on the land. You had the booty patrol, remember? Yeah, interesting how these stories kind of seem to come together and don't. Sounds like a fair prize if you looked that way. Now, and all this interest of the political Zio support aside, notice those last paragraphs that you'll read here. The first status one is a vessel being immune to tax, then the organizational structure obscuring the owners, however improper that was to own something in the commercial world. That requires that we do nothing, the trick being to own nothing but control it. You hear this in the words of the elite, so-called. This is all written in these two articles, but notice that the ship was immune, firstly. Not the people. Don't do that. Don't allow a status to exist that is not protected in the first instance. That's what people in the United States do. They try to make legal entities that they think have a limited tax. You got to find a status in the tax law that's immune. Accepted, I guess they say. Okay? And I'll let my more astute listeners extrapolate that application of the vessel-borne thumbnail here, the local exercise with caution, folks. Don't just run. It takes a little bit of study. And there's a lot to learn, and you shouldn't be in jeopardy when you execute on this. But run. Notice it was a tax-immune status that then gets owned through nested corporations and influence, trying to essentially obscure who the original owners, and it takes a while to go search through those things. If your original status is immune, though, it really won't matter. You have to maintain the status and the purpose, otherwise they will get through that. So I hope something today was enlightening to you, that you can use and do your study and do due diligence. Bring it into your use for yourself. Don't make up stories. Make it right. And I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips or Nature Willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, Journey with Purpose.
Well, that's what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.